This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is, as we've done for many years at this time of the year, year-end federal tax tips for income tax returns for 2017. I think we got some really interesting and confusing stuff for you, everybody. My guests are David Hellman, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, as well as in taxation law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's a real estate attorney and also a CPA. His office is in San Rafael. My other guest is Frank Adam, a tax attorney, real estate broker, and CPA with his office in Pacifica. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Gentlemen, welcome, and it's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. As we all know, Congress is now working on a tax plan bill. And please, if you would, is this really going to simplify our tax system? David, if you would start.
Well, it will simplify it for very low-income earners because it may eliminate them from filing at all.
Really?
But for everybody else, it's not going to simplify anything other than the brackets, maybe fewer brackets, maybe not. But as far as record keeping and what needs to happen, no, it's not going to simplify things.
Frank, I think some people feel that, this tax bill that, may be passed is something to favor large businesses. What do you say?
I think it's too early to tell because in preparing for this show, I did a calculation of individuals or earning anywhere from $25,000 to $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, with the exception of two at the very low income level, people are going to be paying less tax. The question that remains unresolved is how do we get to this magical number of taxable income?
Mm-hmm.
And that pertains to not only individuals, but to businesses and corporations. And until we have that detail in front of us, I don't think anyone can make a conclusive statement as to who it's going to benefit and who it's going to hurt.
In years past, what we have done is at this time of the year, we've tried to put together some tips for you to save money on your income tax return for 2017. And what do you say in terms of perhaps what people should be doing at this point? And for those of you, by the way, who are listening to the live program, and we are doing this on Wednesday evening, November 15th, and I will invite those of you who listen to the full hour to join us with your questions, your comments, and I'll do that in about half an hour or so on our toll-free number. But what should we be doing at this point? All of us who are, whether we're laypersons or people who have knowledge about the tax system, what should we be doing at this point in light of what's going on in Congress? How should we approach this, David, now? All right.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, David.
First, be prepared to act quickly at the end of the year if something comes through and the tax bill actually passes. And in order to be able to act quickly, you really need to have your records in order so you know what kind of income you have and whether or not, for instance, if you itemize deductions and they take away property tax, whether you should be making the second payment in 2017 as opposed to in April of 2018.
Because some people do that to take advantage, in the past, who have done that, paying the December payment as well as the April payment before the end of the taxable year.
Right. Now they face the potential of the alternate minimum tax, but if the ability to deduct it at all goes away, then it probably would make sense to pay the tax this year. The same for state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth estimated payment is due in January,
mm-hmm.
but if the ability to deduct it is gone in January, then it makes sense to deduct it by paying it in 2017 in December.
December 31st.
But in order to know these kinds of things, you also need to know where you are and whether it even makes sense, because if you're not going to have any income or very little income, maybe your cash flow is more important than getting the tax deduction.
You were going to say something, Frank.
He said just about everything I was going to say.
You guys are on the same wavelength.
Not quite.
Yeah.
But another thing is, in terms of getting your records together, don't wait until the week before you sit down to prepare your taxes yourself or send them to your tax preparer to accumulate this information. Start doing it now. If you have a business and you don't keep a set of books, either via a double-entry bookkeeping system or a spreadsheet or something that ensures a certain amount of financial accuracy, do that now. It's very difficult to prepare taxes when you don't have set numbers in front of you that you can rely upon.
You're saying, here we are, November 15th of 2017. You're saying to prepare yourself properly. Whatever Congress does, if they pass this bill this year or whatever, start working on it now.
Yes.
Don't leave it to the last week or two of December.
Or don't leave it to the last week or two or the last few days before you have to send this information to your tax preparer, your accountant, or sit down at whatever computer you're using to do your own taxes. The information necessary to prepare returns should be ready to go. In fact, if you're running a business, you should be keeping a set of books that's always current.
Let me ask you this. A lot of people use TurboTax for their tax returns. What do you think of TurboTax, David?
Well, it's all right for a simple return, but it can do more sophisticated returns. The problem is that the people using it to try to do more sophisticated returns generally aren't tax preparers.
Mm-hmm.
They are lay people who don't know all of the finite and, you know, the important things that maybe should be input into the returns, and that's why you really need to see a tax professional, because TurboTax won't be able to do it all for you. It's sort of as they've always said about computers, garbage in and garbage out. And if you don't put in all the information and you don't know where to put the information, then you're not going to get an accurate return. And it may end up costing you more money than if you'd gone to see a tax professional, and the fee that you pay the professional may be saved several times over by just having somebody prepare it who knows all of those items.
Let me ask you this. The fee you pay a tax preparer is something that is for – isn't that a tax-deductible item or not?
Well, it is for an individual. Generally, most of it would be deducted as a miscellaneous itemized deduction.
Yes, right.
But you lose 2% of your adjusted gross income on that. And I'm not sure what they're going to do with that in the current tax bill, because they've talked about eliminating some items related to that, like child adoption expenses and other things. So we just don't know where all that's going to end up.
Well, although I am not a tax attorney and do not wish to be one, frankly, it's a very complicated area. There's been a lot of talk about perhaps doing away with mortgage interest as being a deduction on tax returns. Frank, what about that?
Right. Well, depending on who you are, the mortgage interest deduction the elimination of that may or may not hurt you. They are doubling the standard deduction. So if your mortgage interest deduction is small, you may reap no benefit from – you may not be reaping any benefit from it now, and you won't be reaping any benefit from it later. But if they double the standard deduction, that's a moot point. You're going to get a higher deduction and hence lower taxable income.
What is the standard deduction? What is it? What have we been dealing with at this point?
You arrive at your gross income, you subtract certain items, and that gives you something called the adjusted gross income. From that number is deducted personal exemptions and standard deduction. That's an amount the government allows you to deduct for the cost of living,
if you will. But the standard deduction, what amount would that be for the average person? How much would that be?
Right now, it's at about $12,000 for married couples, and it's about
two persons.
Yeah, married filing jointly. I think it's in the neighborhood of six for
a single.
That's going to double to 12
really?
And 24.
So we think that's for sure.
That's the proposal.
Really?
That's under, I believe, under both plans.
Oh, under both plans, the
House and Senate.
House and the Senate.
So if you don't have a mortgage, then the doubling of the standard deduction, leaving everything else aside for the moment, could very well help you.
Could be very helpful.
I want to make one other point on the use of tax preparation products, whether it's TurboTax or some other company.
Yeah.
If you're going to prepare your tax returns yourself using those products, it is extremely important that you print a hard copy of the entire return and all of the supporting schedules that go with it, because you may need those to do the subsequent year's returns. And if you don't print it or download it or have a complete copy in one form or another, and I prefer paper, you may find yourself unable to prepare a subsequent year's returns accurately, and you may forego certain deductions that would benefit you.
If one has a business, I understand the IRS code, Internal Revenue Code 179 deduction. What's the significance of that for the businesses, David?
Okay. Currently, it allows the person that buys equipment for their business and puts it into service by the end of the year to take a deduction for the entire amount that they have paid up to certain limits.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us a simple example?
Well, if you buy a copying machine for your office, or if you buy a new car, depending upon the size of the car, because they limited deductions for certain vehicles that aren't considered to be heavy, gross weight of over 6,000 pounds. But if you buy certain things, you're allowed to take a deduction for the entire cost of that in the current year to offset your income from that business.
Really?
Right.
I thought you had to depreciate. If you're buying something used in business, I thought you had to depreciate it over a period of time.
That's the normal rule, but this is an exception to help spur the economy to get people to buy more equipment and therefore keep jobs moving that would otherwise maybe wouldn't go if people didn't buy the equipment.
So is that law that exists right now?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Right. Now, what they're talking about is eliminating the ceiling on it so that anybody could buy, business could buy any sized piece of equipment or airplane or whatever and deduct the whole thing from their taxable income.
So you're saying if I buy a beautiful airliner for several million or 200 million or whatever under what they're talking about doing, I can deduct that in the same year?
That's what airlines would be able to do.
See, I'm glad to know that.
Right.
I didn't know you owned an airline.
Right. I didn't know you were.
Fly you, with Finney.
Fly with Finney.
Oh, boy. What about, and I think that was an incredibly good point you made, Frank, when you talked about print out, if you're going to work with TurboTax or whatever the electronic system you're using may be, print out this so that you have it. We are becoming so reliant upon clouds, computer clouds to save this stuff, and when we may need it, we can't get it.
Right. If your computer system crashes, if the hard drive crashes, or something happens and it's everything you have is in electronic form, you may be out of luck. So it's not the politically correct thing to do these days, but paper has a reliability to it.
Well,
do you drive a car? Do you still have a horse and buggy? you don't have to answer that one.
Well, I may get that horse. Who knows?
But it's also a fact that sometimes the software providers don't allow you access to prior year's information
that.
So that's part of the problem. So you need to print it out so you have the whole thing right away and now so that you don't have to go back to the software provider.
One of the things they're talking about that I have heard, and I'm sure all of you have heard this also if you're listening to the news, which sometimes is very difficult to do, frankly, that they're going to do away with the student loan interest deduction. What about that, David?
Right. They will not allow student loan interest anymore.
Why do they pick on students? What's the point here?
Well, the point is they need some revenue raisers to help limit the cost of this. I mean, there's two ways that you run the government. You either bring in taxes or you cut programs.
Yeah.
And if the thinking is they want to bring in revenue, then they have to take away certain things.
Oh, my. Let me take a moment right now. We are doing this program live on Wednesday evening, November 15th. And for those of you who are listening to the full hour program, you might want to jot down our toll-free number. I'll be inviting you to call in just a few minutes because we do take calls, questions, comments, whatever you have in mind that you'd like to pose to my guests. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you're listening to us on the Internet nationally at www.kalw.org, that's the same number that you would use. Also, I want to let you know that the California Board of Legal Specialization certifies 11 specialties in California. And if you're interested in finding a specialist wherever you may be in the state of California and want to try to see if a specialist may help you, you go to www.calbar.ca.gov and look for legal specialists on your screen and find your county, and that's how you can find the certified specialists in the 11 areas. If you are looking for any one of the four national specialties that the National Board of Trial Advocacy has, you would go to www.nbtalawyers.org, nbtalawyers.org. What other things would you suggest, David, that people should be thinking about, and Frank, that people should be thinking about at this point, just to try to not be overwhelmed at the very end of the year?
Well, as we've talked about, have your records prepared. But for instance, if you have a business and you're thinking about buying a piece of equipment or a heavy vehicle for use in that business, then don't wait to the last minute to go out and start looking for what you want to buy. Start getting prepared now and find the copying machine that you might want to buy this year, or maybe you'll buy it next year, but at least have in mind what you're looking for so that you can get it, because in order to take the tax deduction, it needs to be what's called placed in service in this year. So you need to be able to acquire it and have it at your place of business and start using it by the end of the year.
But that certainly is under current law. I mean,
that is
that's
current
nothing
law.
New that Congress is working that, on.
That's right. That's okay. Nothing new. But the amount that you spend may be different.
I see.
Also, with regard to that, if you don't know what kind of profit your business has earned this year, or if it has a loss this year, if you don't have that information, then worrying about Section 179 may be a moot point. Maybe your profit is such that you won't benefit from a Section 179 deduction this year, because you can't use, as it stands right now, you can't use Section 179 to further a loss. So you can only get to zero. So it's important to have a set of books that are current, so that you can do this kind of year-end tax planning.
Well, when we have done our program, David, you and I have done this over many years now at this time of year, year-end tax tips, it's my recollection, and correct me if I'm wrong, that when a business bought some item that would be expensive, such as a copying machine or a truck or a car used in the business, that would have to be depreciated over a period of years. Now that is no longer the law.
Well,
is that right?
No, it is the law.
Oh,
but and again, as Frank suggested, if you bought something and you cannot use the 179 deduction, then it shifts over and it goes to regular depreciation.
I see. Let me then clarify for myself. What's the distinction between being able to use the 179 deduction and having to depreciate it over a period of years?
Well, it's the function of how much you get to deduct immediately. Under Section 179, you deduct everything up to the limits that, well, number one, the limits are either the greater of what you've paid or the 200 or the lesser of what you've paid for it, or the the exclusion amount of $200,000. But that, once you've hit that limit, then you have to use depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that the item that you're acquiring doesn't qualify for Section 179, and then you do use depreciation. So this is an alternate way of allowing an immediate deduction, but it's an alternative to taking depreciation. But otherwise, you would take the depreciation.
Any further comments on that, Frank?
No, I think that pretty much.
What about renters? I've heard something about renters may be benefited by this.
Right. If Congress doubles the standard deduction,
yeah,
and they eliminate to one degree or another the mortgage deduction,
yes,
the mortgage interest deduction,
yes,
then those people that don't have a mortgage, if they're renters or they're homeowners and have minimal or zero mortgage,
monthly rent, supposedly.
Then if the standard deduction doubles,
yeah,
they will benefit from that as much as a homeowner who isn't allowed to deduct interest, or a homeowner with minimal interest deductions to begin with. Mm-hmm. The partial offset to that is in doubling the standard deduction from 12 to 24, say, for a married couple, they're also eliminating personal exemptions. So while they're giving this deduction, they're taking from one hand, they're giving with one hand and they're taking from another.
Now, what would they be taking? Say that again.
They're taking away the personal exemption.
What does that mean?
In other words, remember earlier I said you arrive at your something called adjusted gross income.
Yes.
Two items are deducted from that. Yes. The standard deduction,
yeah,
and personal exemptions, roughly $4,000 per person. Okay?
Why do we have a personal exemption? What's the point
again,
of that?
Again, that is the amount of money that government is allowing you to keep for the purposes of living.
That was our gift. The gift from the government.
That's right.
I see.
So there...
And that's the federal number.
That's
the state number. They give you a credit.
Yeah. Okay.
A small credit.
Yes.
Small credit.
So they're increasing the standard deduction. They're taking away the personal exemption. So you are going to, you may, if you don't generally itemize deductions, it's very likely that you will benefit to some degree. But again, that is not the most critical analysis here. We just don't know yet how they're going to arrive at this taxable income number.
Now, if the new tax bill, assuming it is passed this year before the end of the year or by no later than December 31st versus not being passed until the new year. What's the significance of that for us, that is the average person, if any?
Well, the issue becomes the effective date.
Yes.
Thinking is generally that it would be effective January 1st of next year.
I see.
They could potentially make it retroactive to January 1st of 2017. I think that would create a lot of chaos.
Do you think they'll do that?
I don't think so, but it's possible. Lots of things are possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot of things that people don't think make sense, and that could be one of them. But if they also waited to... If nothing happened until sometime next year and then it did pass and they tried to make it retroactive to January 1, well, then you have all of this planning issues.
Retroactive to January 1
of 18.
Of 18.
No,
okay.
17.
17.
Well, 17, that would be really chaos. But but if they made it retroactive to 18,
I see.
And you may have paid your property taxes and then all
you
of a sudden found
both the December payment as well as the April payment.
Well, but let's say you decided to wait and pay the April payment next year.
Yeah.
And then they all of a sudden make this bill retroactive to January 1. Well, then the payment of it would be lost as far as any tax deduction, if assuming that is no longer deductible.
Well, we have no control over that.
Well, we don't. And that's part of the issue that we're sort of facing, is that the longer we go without knowing whether the bill is approved or not approved, it makes it that much harder for everybody to plan personally, mm-hmm, as to what they're going to do.
All the more reason to have some estimate of your income in front of you now. So mm-hmm, if something does happen very late in the game, you can move very quickly. If you don't have those numbers ready, you're at a severe disadvantage regardless of what goes on.
Do you believe that for those of us who have tax preparers help us with our tax returns, do you think it would be wise in terms of our organizing our various documents, et cetera, that we try to get in touch with our tax preparers relatively soon, certainly by early December? Or what do you say about that?
Well, given that I prepare taxes, there's a slight conflict of interest here. The more my clients contact me, the better my bottom line gets. So,
but well, go ahead. Brag a little bit.
No, I don't think I'm going to do that. But yeah, it's best to get if you don't have some kind of organizer, if your tax preparer doesn't send you one automatically, and I think most do,
yeah,
call them and ask them for one.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Right. And
that's very helpful.
If you haven't used a tax preparer in the past, there are products that you can purchase that help you organize your taxes. You could probably find them now for free via the internet. I don't think.
But what would you be looking for? How would you, if you're going to Google it, what would you be? How would you
tax organizer? I think would be the
tax organizer.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We are coming again to the end of the half hour, and for those of you who may not be familiar with the program, we record the first half hour. And then KLW in San Francisco sends that out to a number of stations in California, which air the half hour next week. And so for those of you who are with us now and will stay with us on the live program for, let's say, half hour or so, I'll be inviting you to call in, ask questions, make comments, etc. And hopefully, if you are listening to us live, it will make some sense to you, and we'll do something that we think will be beneficial to head you on in the best direction. And for those of you who are listening to the half-hour program and will be listening next week, Your Legal Rights is available as a podcast free of charge at www.kalw.org/subscribe, or just go to www.klw.org and look for Your Legal Rights. All right, everybody, let me give you the toll-free number. I hope you have some good questions out there. This is a very complicated area, and it has become even more complicated with what's going on in Congress. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Whether you're listening in the Bay Area or listening on the internet at www.kalw.org, that's the number to call. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are with me in the office, I shouldn't say office, here at the station. Frank Adam, tax attorney, real estate broker, and CPA. His office is in Pacifica. And David Hellman, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, as well as taxation law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's also a real estate attorney and a CPA, and his office is in San Rafael. And let me give you just a little bit before we take our first call. Some people are interested. I can see that by the blinking on the phone. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar Association, here you might want to jot this down, 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. I tell you this because in California, with minor exception, nearly every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what the problem is, They'll do their best to find an experienced attorney to talk with you for a half an hour consultation. And again, with minor exception, you will pay in the state of California somewhere between $25 to $35 for the half an hour consultation. The beauty of that is the money doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service because it's a great public service. So I hope you don't need it, but that's available to you if you do want to find out what your basic rights or obligations may be. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So we will start with Karen. Karen, welcome to your legal rights.
Yes, Chuck.
Hi.
Let me just get you off speakerphone.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about anybody else out there.
Slow down, Karen. Slow down just a little. Karen, slow down just a little bit. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. But you were speaking too fast. Go ahead.
Okay. I am 72, college graduate, still working full-time in my own business, and this is the most absurd, confusing garbage of this new tax law that they're trying to jam down everybody's throat. That's ridiculous, and they're going to get rid of the student loan deduction when millions of students are in debt up to their eyeballs for the rest of their lives. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has spent $60 million on private jets for his family to go to Florida every weekend, but the students are going to have to pay the price. So that's my comment to everybody that's listening out there and to your guests, and that's what I think, because it's completely absurd and mind-boggling and ridiculous. And it's meant intentionally to confuse people, to scare people, and they're going to get rid of all these deductions, and we're going to get rid of that. They've got to raise money. We're spending trillions of dollars dropping bombs in the Middle East every day. Come on.
Karen, thank you very much for your comments, and turn your radio back up. But what do you really think, Karen? Okay, everybody. We have more calls. Martin, get those names up on the glass here so I know who's ready to ask a question, because I want people to be able to ask the questions and so my guests can respond. Frank, you had some comments in response to Karen.
I'm going to leave that alone.
All right,
leave
it alone.
As I am to respond. From an opposite point of view, while you were making the introductions for the second half of the program, I found online a tax organizer that's free. I just downloaded it. It's put out by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. It's 33 pages long, and it seems to be very thorough.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Again, it's put out by what?
The AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And
okay.
It's online. They did not ask me for a credit card number. I downloaded it in
real
time. Yeah.
And you are not an owner of this? Okay. Because we're watching you carefully tonight.
No.
Okay.
No commissions.
No commission. All right. Carla from Oakland, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear
me?
Are
you going to be as dramatic as Karen was?
No, I'm sure there are areas where I could be, but I'm trying to keep it focused. My head is already spinning. I was kind of running around doing things, trying to listen earlier, and I wanted to be clear about the deduction for like a major purchase kind of thing. Does that apply to individuals? Individuals or just
Carla, give us a simple example of what you're talking about.
I really kind of need to replace my car. It's 24 years old.
Now, do you use it for business or just pleasure?
Well, I use it to commute to work, but I can't write that off because of my income.
You can't write that off at all. Commuting miles are not, or commuting expenses are not deductible.
That's right.
The only way you're going to benefit from the Section 179 depreciation deduction is if you have your own business.
Yeah.
And as
That's
an individual, you would file Schedule C for that business and the accompanying forms for depreciation.
So you're not doing that. You don't have a Schedule C, Carla?
No, I don't. But, you know, the interesting thing is that I've been an adjunct professor for over 20 years.
Wow.
And I've never really had a contract. I go kind of semester to semester, and it kind of drives me crazy on one level. But in a way, I kind of am an independent contractor, but I don't really file a Schedule C about this.
Do you get a W-2?
Yes.
Well, then you're not an independent contractor. Right. You're an employee.
You're an employee.
Right. But as an employee, you can take on a Form 2106, you can also take depreciation expense.
Yeah.
But not for commuting miles.
Not for commuting. Right. But if you go between one job and a second job, you can deduct the mileage between those two jobs.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Do you have another job, Carla?
Well, actually, in one semester, an academic year, I actually teach at two different colleges.
Really? Well, then if you're working on the same day, you could deduct the mileage between the two campuses.
Carla, let me ask you this. Do you have a tax preparer who has helped you with your tax returns?
Yes, he's great.
And your tax preparer has never told you about possibly this thing that my guests have just talked about?
Well, I guess the problem is that I teach on different days. At different campuses. I never teach on the same day.
On the same day.
Okay. Then you have a problem. It won't work.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
Too bad. Too bad. see what the campuses can do to try to assist you. I'm sure they would wonderfully assist you.
Now, if you do have materials, for instance, if you have materials you hand out to students or if you need to buy books in order to plan your lessons, all those items would be deductible.
Really?
And you would be able to put those on a 2106.
Okay, 2106. I'm checking that. Okay. The other thing, I've just heard this. This is just a little off the road here a little bit. But somebody told me that this tax bill has something in it about if you're a graduate student, that they'll tax you on your tuition, or if you're a graduate student instructor, you can't. They'll tax you on your income doubly, or I don't know, something about graduate students. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't heard anything like that.
No,
okay.
I mean sometimes, in lieu of scholarships, colleges, universities will give
A teaching position.
A teaching position, and then that income is taxable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that could be what they're talking about, and they may be eliminating some of the deductibility or some of the exclusion amount for...
I think that might be it. Yeah.
For some of the scholarship money.
I mean, I did teach my last semester of getting my master's, and I did. It was taxable income. Yeah, that's not... But maybe there is an exclusion thing.
Well, Carla, I thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
And I hope that you're able to find a way to save a little money.
Well, always. Don't we all?
Okay, Carla,
thanks
so much.
Good night.
All right, again, our toll-free number, we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, November 15th. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, wherever you may be in the United States, because we are on the Internet nationally at www.kalw.org. And we have right now, we have Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. You've heard from me a few times in the past.
Your voice sounds familiar. Hang him up. Hang him up. Go ahead, Ed. Go ahead.
Actually, I can help you out with that last item there. I did hear this morning that the tuition that you're not charged as a graduate student will be considered taxable if they go ahead with what they're proposing there. And so that's what's got a lot of grad students up in arms, is because the waived tuition is going to be considered taxable.
Oh, I think I understand what he's saying. He's saying that if you are given an education and you're not paying the tuition, the fair market value of that tuition is taxable income.
Okay.
That's what they're talking about, which I think is very unkind myself. I'm not a grad student. I'm much older now, but I'm just saying that's a very unkind thing to do. Yes.
Well, and it could have some fairly severe economic impacts on the students.
They had a big meeting at MIT today. It was on the NPR this morning. And so that's going to have serious ramifications throughout the country. But on my issues, I'm blind, and I guess I've had some sort of an exemption. I mean, my tax return is prepared by a tax preparer, but I'm assuming that my blindness has given me some small benefit over the years. I don't know if... I think I've heard that may be discontinued, and I do itemize because I have property tax and medical expenses, et cetera, and I don't know just how much all of this is affecting me. Will I be more likely doing the standard deduction now and not really find it possible to itemize and benefit that way.
Very good, very good point. Turn your radio back up, Ed, so that we can give you some response to that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. David, what comments do you have for Ed
on
that one?
Well, right now, if you are blind, you get an extra exemption. So that helps a little. It's an extra $4,000, whatever it is,
okay.
$4,100 this next year. But in terms of if they eliminate those exemptions and your itemizable deductions are reduced down to a point where you can't itemize anymore, then this double standard deduction would replace it. Now, it may not be enough to fully replace what he's getting now, and that's what we just don't know until they come up with what specific things they're going to disallow in the future as far as being an itemized deduction and whether they're going to totally eliminate the exemptions.
Frank, anything
further
on that?
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Ed. Elaine, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Elaine's calling from San Francisco.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Should I start talking?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks for taking my call. This is what happened. My mother's house that she's owned since 1958 in San Francisco caught on fire, and the insurance company gave her so much money for it to fix, but it wasn't enough. And so then we wind up selling it.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to know is, whatever we got from the insurance company and whatever she received from selling it, are those dollars supposed to be reported to IRS in her taxes?
Well, not the way you're putting it. The amount, she paid a certain amount for the home, right? And she but when the home was damaged, she had the cost of repairing that damage.
That's not taxable.
No,
is it?
No.
Okay.
To the purchase price, you're going to you or your mom are going to add the cost of repairing the home. You're going to subtract.
But we didn't repair it.
Oh, you did not repair it.
No, we sold it all burnt up.
Okay. Well, then the amount that you receive from the insurance company, and correct me if I'm wrong, is going to reduce your basis in the home and affect the capital gain that you have on the home. Is your mom single or married?
Single.
Okay, then the first $250,000 of any gain is not taxable. Anything over that is. Since she got an insurance reimbursement, but that's not offset by any repair, you take what you paid for the home, subtract the insurance reimbursement. That's the amount, among other items, that you compare against the selling price to compute the gain.
Elaine, let me ask you this. What did your mother pay for the home when she bought it? How much?
About $30,000 in 1958.
And how much was the insurance payment to your mom on this?
It was about $700,000, but we tried to get the house repaired, they said that we were missing things that we didn't have coverage for, and it would cost a lot more than what the insurance company gave us.
So on a home that originally was purchased for $30,000, the cost from the insurance company, the cost to repair, which and there was no repairing of the house, was $700,000. So wouldn't that, David, be an incredible capital gain?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a big capital gain.
What should her mom do at this point?
Well, I mean, she's going to have to pay the tax on it. Essentially, you add, you also get to factor in any improvements that have been made to the house over the past, since 1958.
Sure, whatever that is, which would increase the basis.
Yeah, but with $700,000 coming off, it's going to reduce it to a negative basis, and then you have whatever the burnt house and the land sold for. Then you get to take your $250,000 exclusion off of that, and it's going to be a probably fairly hefty capital gain that your mother will end up paying tax on.
What, Elaine? Let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
When your mom sold the house that had not been repaired, what did she get for it at that point?
She got about $600,000.
So she's got $700,000. From the insurance company, plus $600,000 for the value of the land. This is in San Francisco, is it not?
Right.
Right, but yeah. We spent quite a bit of money. My mother has dementia and had to be in a nursing home.
Ah, okay.
So we've spent most of that money for her care.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that may be a medical deduction that would be available this year, but may be lost next year if that is eliminated as an itemizable deduction. Yeah.
You do have, do you have a tax preparer helping you with all of this problem?
Not yet.
Well, you better.
You definitely need one.
I'm not being facetious. I'm trying to get you directed. Yeah, you need to do it.
We should get started on it now?
I think so.
Yes,
sure.
Because if you owe estimated...
Okay, can I come to the guy that's on your show right now?
So, I mean, if you...
I'm sure he would say, no, you don't have to.
but you also have an estimated tax problem that you may need to have a payment put in by January or maybe this year for California purposes if they eliminate the state tax deduction. So,
Elaine, are you the attorney, in fact, for your mom?
No.
Does she have someone? In other words, the money that was received for the sale of the property and the insurance, who is in control of that money at this point?
I am.
Oh, you are. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Mm-hmm. So Elaine, I think we are trying to tell you you need to get some help from a tax preparer.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
please,
I see.
Please do. By the way, if you are looking for a certified specialist in tax law, let me give you the website for the California Board of Legal Specialization. You can look and see and ask, call people and after you get their names and phone numbers. But you can access this www.calbar.ca.gov. And then go to legal specialists on your screen of your computer. Click that on for San Francisco County, and it'll show you who the certified specialists in tax law are, if that's what you'd like to do.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you for a great show, as usual.
I'm glad you called. Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
I'm glad, too. Thank you guys for being there. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Again, for those of you, we still have a few minutes left. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you want to listen to the full hour again, because I think what both of my guests are doing here is incredibly helpful, in my opinion, and both of them have been involved with this program a long time. They are not funders of this program. They are men who have come here to share their knowledge with you, and they enjoy doing this. It's a great public service. So for the full hour, you can get a free podcast by going to www.kalw.org/subscribe, or just go to the website for KALW, www.kalw.org, and look for Your Legal Rights, and it'll be posted on the station's, KALW's website by tomorrow. Let me tell you who is here. David Hellman is a certified specialist in taxation law as well as estate planning and probate law, estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in San Rafael. My other guest is Frank Adam, a tax attorney, real estate attorney. He's a real estate broker and CPA. By the way, David is also a CPA, and Frank's office is in Pacifica. All right, let's see who we have now. We have Nancy from Berkeley. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi.
I love your program.
Well,
I've been listening to it forever. Anyways.
I'll have that very long beard by that time, but go ahead.
Yes. Okay, I have two questions. One of them is about Social Security. Mm-hmm. I heard that the Social Security cost of living is going up this year, that we're going to get a little bit money. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. There's going to be a small increase.
Okay. And,
like what? What percentage, David? Do you know?
My recollection is that it was, was it 3% maybe? Or is it 0.3%?
I don't recall.
Okay, we don't know.
But
go ahead.
It's not a huge amount.
The Congress is not going to be able to take that away, right?
Well, Congress can do whatever they choose to do.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so we may not get it.
Possibly.
No.
We don't know. We don't
okay.
know. And I hope it's not. I hope the decision is just not made on flipping a coin, but go ahead.
Yeah. My other question is, I'm not quite sure I understand the difference between an exemption and a standard deduction.
I think that's a good question because I was confused with that also. Frank, okay. would you try to do it so that we can understand?
Okay.
Yeah.
To answer your question, looking online, it looks like it's a 2% cost of living adjustment for Social Security.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Now, would you respond to her question?
So let's do this using some numbers as an example.
Yeah, please, if you would.
Let's say you have adjusted gross income of $100,000. From that, two items are deducted. One is called the standard deduction. The other is called the personal exemption. And I'll use round numbers just to keep it easy.
Yeah.
So the first thing you deduct is the standard deduction, which is $12,000.
Yeah.
So that brings your income to $88,000. From that $88,000, you deduct a personal exemption amount, which is about $4,000. So now you have taxable income of $84,000.
Mm-hmm.
It is on that $84,000 that you will pay tax in accordance with whatever tax brackets are in force.
And that is current law right now.
That's going to be that's the current law and...
Yeah.
It may or may not be the new law. They're talking about doubling the standard deduction, that first item
could
that
be $24,000.
Could be $24,000, and removing the personal exemptions entirely.
Oh, so removing the $4,000.
Exactly.
Okay. So now if I itemize my deductions, because I have enough expenses so that I can do that, what is that? I know you were talking about that they may get rid of, the itemized deductions.
Well, what are your itemized deductions currently? How much, roughly?
How much is the amount?
Well, it's medical, mainly medical, and I don't own, my house has been paid for a number of years.
Well, so are your current itemized deductions above $12,000?
Yeah.
Then the new tax law may very well not benefit you.
Great.
Okay.
Nothing
Sorry.
Those guys do benefit anybody who isn't very rich.
Sorry to ruin your evening,
Nancy. That's all right.
Yeah.
It's been ruined
It's been ruined already. All right.
Yeah,
well, thank
all
you.
My evenings have been ruined a year ago.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. This is very interesting. Our next caller is Starchild. Is this a phony name, or are you really? Is your name really Starchild?
That's really my name.
Go ahead. What's your question?
Thank you. This question isn't so much for myself. I tend to agree with Karen, who called in earlier. I don't necessarily want to pay for Donald Trump's $60 million golf vacations, but for people who may think that the federal government needs more money to pay for those kind of things, or for bombing people in other countries, or six-figure government salaries, I was wondering whether this new tax legislation will contain anything, or maybe there's something already in the books like this that just the word hasn't gotten out about, a tax me more fund. I understand that some states have these funds where people who don't feel that they're paying enough in taxes can contribute extra voluntarily. Send
Why would they do that?
To the federal government.
Why?
And you say why?
Yeah.
You mean why would people want to pay more?
Yeah.
That's
Do you
a
know?
Good question. I don't personally understand it, but I hear people all the time talking about, wanting higher taxes for, various people, and I assume they think if they think it's a good enough cause that, they're willing to force others to pay, that they would be wanting to do so themselves, whether they're not they're legally required to.
Stop.
Maybe there's a way for them to do so.
Hold for a minute. I want David to respond to that.
All right. The government will accept contributions.
It will?
Absolutely. So you can send it to the IRS and tell them that it's a contribution, or just to the Treasury Department, and that you're making a donation to the government. They will accept it. Won't get you a tax deduction, but they'll accept it.
They'll say, what a great person you are.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Starchild, go ahead.
I guess I'm aware that people can, always sort of just write a bigger check on their own, but I was just wondering if there's any kind of formal fund or sort of specific way for people to say, you know, yeah, I want to be taxed more, here's my larger contribution. As I said, I've heard about this, that a number of state governments have set up these funds. They haven't collected very much money. I don't know if that's just because the word hasn't gotten out, or a lot of people are just hypocrites who say they want higher taxes, but really they just want other people to have to pay higher taxes. But does the federal government have such a fund, or is there one in this legislation?
Well, as far as I know, there is no specific place. If you give the government the money, they will spend it where it just goes into the pot and it gets spent.
You can't say, I'd like it to go over here, I'd like it to go over
there. Not unless
there's
a specific fund set up for it. Like California has the contributions you can check off on your income tax return if you want to send it to a specific fund, but that's extra money you pay in. But federal government does not have that.
Yeah. Okay, Starchild.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for calling. All right, we have now Nikki. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I just have a quick question. It sounds like so many changes, you know, such as taking away a lot of the deductions that, like, the more average income people, as opposed to the astronomically high income people, like, I would think that if student loans and property tax, especially in a high cost area as this, and mortgage deduction and, you know, some of these things being taken from our deductions, and just, you know, $12,000 per person exemption, I mean, doesn't that sound like there's going to be a big uproar? I mean, how could this possibly pass? I mean, it seems so obvious to benefit.
Let me get some comments from my guests. Turn your radio back up, and thank you, Nikki, for that question. David, please.
Well, the time for the uproar is now, because if they pass it, it's going to be too late. But those kind of things also...
How do we uproar?
Well, you talk to your congressperson and your senators. It does impact the wealthy, though, too, because a lot of them take property tax deductions and mortgage interest deductions. So it is impacting everybody that way in terms of eliminating deductions.
Very quickly, Frank, if you would. Any comments on that?
I think it's too early to tell. There are two versions of this bill floating around. There's one in the House, one in the Senate. They haven't been reconciled yet. The final details are not done. I think the people's opinions from a political standpoint are very, very fixed. So if we can get past that and just let the process occur, then we can opine on the final bill.
If there is one at all.
Yes.
I want to thank you both very much for joining us on the program. David Hellman, specialist in estate planning, trust and probate law, also taxation law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization with office in San Rafael. And Frank Adam, tax attorney, real estate broker, and CPA with law office in Pacifica. And David, pardon me, you're also a CPA. Pardon me for missing that. All right, everybody. Next time on Your Legal Rights, our program will be on the Bay Area Resilience Collaborative, which provides legal help for California North Bay wildfire survivors. Guests are Carol Kahn, Director of Public Service Programs at the Bar Association of San Francisco, Tiella Chalmers, CEO of the Alameda County Bar Association and leader of the Bay Area Resilience Collaborative, Gloria Chun, Director of the Pro Bono Legal Services Program at the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and Dan Wade, an insurance attorney and Vice Director of the American Bar Association Young Lawyers Division Disaster Legal Services Program. That's next time on Your Legal Rights. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.